And away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on this Friday, January 24th, 2025. Guess what, Tom? We had the lowest dew point in the history of Tucson today. Well, actually, it ties a dew point. Do you have any idea what that would be? That means...
It's below zero.
It was 9 degrees below zero.
And but, you know, I'm a little confused. I thought the dew point was the temperature at which dew would form in the ambient atmosphere.
I don't know. All I know is you get down to those areas. It's pretty dry.
If it's 12 below zero, does it just form as little ice crystals?
I don't know what dew point means. Do you have any idea about what a dew point does?
Well, that is the point at which, you know, moisture will precipitate out of the air and land on a solid object. And
well,
so,
I think it would be almost immediately, it's
snowing. Basically,
it's just little crystals.
Yeah, you don't have any mist; you just have snow.
Yeah. Anyway,
this explains why my eyes have been driving me crazy for the last few days. I just want
to take a
grapefruit spoon and pop them out.
I understand. Dylan Smith, editor and co-publisher, and founder of the online news service TucsonSentinel.com, with me is my co-media host. We do that on Friday. Dylan's past chair of Lion Publishers, Lion, the acronym for Local Independent Online Publishers, Online News Publishers, and his organization, TucsonSentinel.com, is one of our three media sponsors, along with Green Valley News, Sahorita Sun, and Tucson Spotlight. Thank you, Dylan. Always a pleasure to have you.
Always great to be on.
All right. Want to say we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studios. We're not actually out at Green Things. I've had a lot of people say, oh, I'd like to come out and see you at Green Things. I mean, it'd be nice to be out there, but we're not there. We are. They have the naming rights, and I'm glad we do, to our studio here at the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, where we have five radio stations now under one roof. They're all doing very well. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice. We began our 15th year with our radio program this month, our 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. All of our podcasts, live listening at buckmastershow.com. When we do our live line, that's the telephone interview, 790-2040. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a quarter, we bring in the police chief in the city of Tucson, Chad Kazmir, is here. Chief, how are you?
Good, Bill. How are you doing?
Good to see you. Thanks for coming in. Why don't we begin with, since we are in the midst of a new year, I'm curious, and I know the listeners are too, what are the crime statistics show for, what kind of year was it in 2024?
It was a tough year, Bill. Everybody hears me talk about evidence-based strategies. Our Department of Justice invested in Tucson with the public safety partnership process. That means we have experts across the country who come in to help us and evaluate our crime trends and our workflows within the department, and then we travel across the country to go see theirs. And even with some, you know, really impressive programs and restructuring the department, unfortunately, we still had a higher count of fatalities in traffic last year, which was one of our primary focuses. I'll just remind the community we focus right now, our four strategic initiatives are driving safety, which we all know is a lot of room for improvement. People saw people this morning probably distracted, not paying attention. Those left turns, you got to look both ways before you go, even if you have the green light. We had 64 homicides last year, which was about a 10% increase. So on a five-year snapshot, you know, we look at 28-day, one-year, and five-year cycles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were down from a high of 86 homicides in 2021, but I want to see that number go down every year. And we had 64 homicides that we had last year. We had 175 non-fatal shootings, which was up about 15%. And on top of that, we had another 400 shootings where folks weren't injured. So that's 639 total firearm incidents. It's almost two a day. It's 1.75 a day. So we certainly have a gun culture here in Tucson. We have younger individuals who are, you know, spontaneous violence of things that used to be a disagreement or a fist fight might turn into shots being fired now. What's interesting, though, for the listeners is the majority of those incidents happened from 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. So whether we're talking about gun violence, we're talking about street racing, we're talking about just how to prevent yourself from being a victim of a crime in general, it's, you know, be home at a reasonable hour and know where your kids are.
And how many were related to illegal immigrants?
So last year, so the answer is zero. So out of all of those incidents, both in when we evaluate the shooter or the victim in those crimes, so as we're hearing that narrative across the country, mm-hmm. We're not seeing that here, fortunately, here in Tucson. So not one of those involved somebody who didn't have citizenship.
Is the unsheltered population driving the narrative?
They're not driving it, but they're certainly contributed to it. So we had 17 of those 64 homicides. So nearly a third of those were homeless. So we saw a drastic increase in the unsheltered population violence on each other, not necessarily on folks. We also had some of that of community going into camps where there were violence would occur, where folks were unhappy with camps being located. So something we're certainly paying attention to. You know, the streets are not an easy place to live on, and a lot of those folks are armed with, you know, weapons to keep themselves safe.
Mm-hmm. Here's Dylan Smith. Dylan, what's on your mind?
Well, you're citing the figure of 600 some gun incidents. There are even more gun-related incidents that you have to deal with. One just last night at a local bar with somebody with a shotgun who was being threatening, and you know, folks at the bar threatening to shoot him. Right? So, no shots were fired, so it's not included in that number. So they, you know, that figure is kind of in an undercount of the level of things you have to deal with.
Absolutely. I mean, it's safe to assume the vehicles around you have a firearm in them. So when you're deciding whether you should honk and wave that somebody's number one next to you, or just, you know, chalk it up as bad driving and go on your way. We have a gun culture conversation that we have to have here in Tucson. So again, I never get bogged down into the gun control conversation. Let's start with just safe gun ownership. So we had a minor, an 18-year-old who was manufacturing 3D printed gun parts and shot himself in the leg this week. We had an 8-year-old who was playing with a gun and shot themselves this week. You know, responsible gun ownership, let's just start there. That means, you know, secure your weapons in your house. If you're going to have the only safe place in a vehicle to store a firearm is in a device that's meant for that, not your glove box or a center console.
Drug-related homicides, when they're involving young people, and what is they're fighting over, what type of drugs? I've heard it, they've been fighting over even marijuana.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, most of the folks in town, especially the unsheltered population, you're talking about methamphetamine and fentanyl. Fentanyl is the buzzword, but the reality is most folks who have substance misuse disorders are poly drug users, and they're using fentanyl and methamphetamine. Those two drugs have very different impacts on people. Methamphetamine can make people spontaneously violent, and it's a dangerous drug, and so it's something we're still combating. I don't have a great number because we don't always get that information. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that, and this number will fluctuate as end of the year cases are solved, but right now we're sitting at about 90% solvency rate. That means two things. One, it means community is willing to talk to the officer. So this narrative around the country of officers not being supported or folks not trusting them is just not the case here in Tucson. That means people are communicating when they're victims of crime. It also means we have some really competent, capable, and dedicated detectives that go out there and they solve these crimes.
So you're saying 9 out of 10 are what they call in your business cleared?
Correct. And that's not the case across the country. You know, that's a 50, you know, just around a 50% solvency rate is a national average. And so that does create a big burden. If you think about it, that means that's more caseload going to the Pima County Attorney's Office when we're solving these cases. But what I'll tell you is when we talk about, and we do this every year, even if the numbers were great and they were all positive, I would still be meeting with the team and going, okay, how did our efforts impact the community last year, and what does it look like this year? And one of the things that I'll tell you is, you know, we're arresting over 50 prohibited possessors a month, and we're not seeing the consistency or accountability that we'd like through the judicial process. So we're working with judges, we're working with Pima County Attorney, and Ms. Conover has made some organizational changes so we have more consistency of issuing. But I got to see some growth in that space. That means we're making sure that some of the folks that have been, you know, are slow learners, they've been arrested 3 or 4 times for prohibited possessor. We need those people to stay in jail so there's some accountability. So the arrest is the front end. And, you know, I'd also like to dissect, arrest is different than incarceration. We can leverage an arrest to change behavior, whether it's talking about violent crime, irresponsible gun ownership, fentanyl, the unsheltered population issues, but sometimes we blend those conversations.
All right, here's Dylan.
So when a crime is solved on your books, that doesn't necessarily mean the prosecution was successful and there was a guilty outcome.
That is absolutely correct. Yeah, and, you know, and so that comes into a conversation called something we call Data Lake, and it sounds just like it is. It's a this safe space where any department, any organization can share data, and then we can all dissect it in a safe space, and there's, you know, no confidentiality breaches and all these things. And I'll tell you, county attorney's been a great partner, so is the Pima County Sheriff, and we're working on the judges. The judges are a missing component of that. They get to somewhat make decisions with autonomy, and mm-hmm. nobody knows. That's why we all go, and when we vote, you know, every 4 years we're like, okay, well, they're in there, they're probably doing a good job. That's not the case. Some are doing a great job and some aren't. And so I'll be making that conversation more public this year, as when decisions get made that we don't agree with, I'm going to be bringing those attentions to the community's attention.
But that doesn't necessarily, even if you consider a case solved and you are, you know, personally confident and as an organization confident that you have, you know, gotten the right person, maybe the evidence doesn't actually arise to being able to convict them beyond, you know, a reasonable doubt.
Right, or a substantial likelihood of prosecution is,
well, even that, if you can't even get into court with right. it because, well, there maybe are just too many gray areas. Even though you may be, you know, you would stake your reputation on this person being the criminal, it's just not going to fly.
It's just not a case. Well, so it's a couple things. I think if we're being fair, part of it is staffing levels and what capacity. I think historically, no matter who's in charge of the county attorney's office, there's about a 50% threshold of moving cases forward where mm-hmm. cases are adjudicated or are pled out. One of the things that we saw last year and a trend that I want to work on is possession cases of firearms, prohibited possessors moved over to solicitation. Okay, well, and that's because that happens because possession cases are not probation eligible. And I'm not looking to fill jails, but I'm looking to hold people accountable who are breaking the law and are creating violence in our community. So we're trying to dissect who are the most probable folks of the prohibited possessor group that are creating harm in the community, and then really, really focusing in with our judicial partners, including the county attorney, to make sure
the frequent flyers people. That you see over
yeah,
and over and
it's
over
a
again.
Small percentage of the population that's committing the majority of our crime. And so we did launch on something towards the end of last year called a crime reduction meeting. That's our version of what ComStat is, and you've probably heard that mm-hmm. across the country in different spaces, but it's really a data-driven approach to what, you know, what's a 28-day snapshot look like from the month before? What does this snapshot look like? What commitments did we make to invest resources to change behavior in the community, and did it work? And we're doing that on a monthly basis.
A quarter of a million calls for response, Chief, in the city of Tucson in 2024.
That's a lot of work for 750 deployable police officers. And I'll tell you, they almost doubled that with on-site activity. And that's important because the conversation I like to have with everybody is, while responding to 911 calls for service is a primary responsibility that we have as a police department, we don't get ahead. The crime's already been committed. The issue's already occurred. So if we want to get ahead of crime and change the shape of what that looks like in our community and how we deem that to be safe, that's with on-site activity. That means traffic stops, narcotics investigations, responding to neighbor complaints, those types of things.
How do you get ahead of those kinds of numbers?
Well,
it's crazy.
You squeeze every ounce of efficiency you have in a department that has 1,197 folks in it in the 33rd largest city in the country.
And you want more. You want more, and Prop 414 would give you more, and you've heard the arguments against it. Well, if we need more police, why wasn't it budgeted?
I tell you, you know, it's a really complex onion to unpeel here.
Maybe we should take the break and then try to begin unpeeling
yeah,
that.
Yeah, let's do that because we're going to get deep there.
I've got about 1 minute before the break. So, Tom, I'm going to take it.
I don't think you can answer that one in 1 minute.
No, I'm going to take the break right now. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. The chief of police is here, Chad Kazmaier. Dylan Smith is joining us. He's my media person co-host. Always good to see Dylan from TucsonSentinel.com. Be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Okay, saddled up for segment two on the Buckmaster Show. The Chief of Police, City of Tucson, Chad Kazmar, is here, and so is Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com, founder, editor, publisher, chief bottle washer.
Exactly, that's the most important part.
He takes out the trash and all the other stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. I brought up before the break Proposition 414, which would raise the city of Tucson sales tax, and folks would be actually voting on this early ballots.
March 11th.
Yeah.
Ballots go out in a
couple of weeks.
Two and a half weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
Mail-in ballots.
So how many officers, if this passed, could folks see from the police department?
Well, let me just start so I'll be real clear to the listeners. I can educate and not advocate as chief of police in my position. I'm not an elected official. So it would give us an additional 40 officers and 80 PSI and CSOs. It also gives additional staff for the fire department and of course, the 911, the 311 call takers and dispatchers.
There's a lot of critique coming from progressives that this measure has too much spending on the police department and not enough on services that would prevent crime ahead of time, you know, especially dealing with housing and, you know, those sorts of issues. Trying not to advocate, because I realize you can't be an advocate for or against, the law would bar that, but how do you respond to that issue that criticizes, that says this is too much about cops and not enough about social services that keep people from even having to deal with cops in the first place?
Sure. So my first response, and I'm certainly hearing that out in the community as well, what I would say is what people don't know is 95% of my nearly $200 million budget is personnel cost, just salaries. That means I have 5% of the rest of my budget to run an entire budget. So I don't have a budget for fleet, marked units, unmarked units, handguns, rifles, less lethal, body armor, all of the contractually mandated equipment, Axon technology. Folks want us to be transparent, record those interactions, have less lethal, the tasers, have modern technology so we can do records requests, RMS. That's about $4.5 million a year, not in my budget. So just like our homes, you know, and inflation has just been devastating to everybody, including government. Cop cars now are $100,000 for a fully equipped cop car, if you can get one from Ford, which I've had Fords on order for 2.5 years. Mm. And so what I would say to people is just, you know, I actually don't mind that conversation, because once I educate folks on the needs and the expenses of things, then they better understand. I'll go back to the original question of, you know, we have twice the poverty rate of the rest of the country. We are sales tax generated revenue budget, and that makes it really difficult. Unlike the county that uses property taxes, people don't necessarily make that distinction. And so our budget needs have been consistent. I've been involved with the budget process as the second in command under Chief Magnus, and now as a chief of police for over a decade. Our needs have not changed. Our annual needs have been consistent and just growing with costs. So that's why out of that $80 million, yes, about 66% of it reflects covering the cost of public safety needs. That's police, fire and EMS, and your 911 center. What I would tell you is I'm a huge advocate of alternative resources and putting the right work in the right hands. But the foundation of a community, of a safe community, and those other non-traditional resources working is your public safety team. The other ones don't work if you don't have those to enhance. And I think that's what, you know, hopefully folks who watch Mayor and Council in our discussions about the shelter population, fentanyl, and our evidence-based strategies of what we're doing to reduce violent crime reported.
Okay, two knocks that I can bring up from the other side who are saying this is the urging people to vote no. One, if this is all so important, why wasn't it in the budget? And number two, if it passes, what assurance would there be that this is going to actually happen?
Great questions, Bill. So the first one is, you know, and I'll just add to the other one we hear is like the city is not fiscally responsible in the way that they run their budget.
Right.
So my response to that is, well, then get to know your budget. And guess what? Not one new person did I see at Mayor and Council this week during the budget presentation. So get involved, have a voice, pay attention, ask questions. We're there and we'd appreciate the attendance. Two is we have to recognize also the state shared revenue loss from the state is a big deal and was impactful, and that is impacting us. What I would say is, or is there always room to tighten up the budget and squeeze more out? Absolutely. But there's not $80 million. We received public safety, police and fire received $15 million each, $30 million a year for 5 years at a Prop 101. That's what funded our vehicles and the updating of a lot of the fire stations. When that sunsetted a few years ago, then the three public safety teams went from two splitting $30 million to three splitting $18 million. And now this is a budget base. This will cover our needs over the next decade. It gives us a new police station where we're having most of the growth on the southeast part of our town. Air support's been a big consternation for some of the folks in the community who think I want to do surveillance on everybody in the community.
I wanted to ask you about that.
You know, the plane is important because
it's not a drone.
It is not a drone.
Well,
it is
a lot
plane.
Of people are thinking it's a drone.
We do have drones. We have three helicopters.
But a big like Predator drone.
Not a military grade drone. No, this is a plane that can fly at, you know, 5,000 to 20,000 feet of elevation and use technology. So when we have those over 600 shootings and those violent crimes and criminals who don't care about your safety or ours, that we can safely surveil them until they go to a home. And that's a much safer detention apprehension than it is when we do currently when we do street grabs and we use other devices where vehicles flee from us. So it's a safer, smarter way of doing the work. That's important too, because 50% of my patrol officers now have less than 5 years on. So I have to give them time to learn how to do their job, and apprehending a homicide suspect is not a safe thing to do. So when you dive into the safe and vibrant city or Prop 414, you can go to tucsonaz.gov/prop414 and read more. And you look at these breakdowns, what I would say is that we have five categories that reflect the complexities of the issues that we're facing in Tucson. Because I've also heard, well, I didn't get to put my feedback in. I think that's a really difficult thing. What I would tell you is over the last 5 years of work that we're doing out in the community, and as we get that feedback of folks who are victims of crime and have needs, and whether that's going through mayor and council or that's going directly through to other department directors, that feedback has driven the proposal that you see in front of you. So I always say I kind of know when I make the right decision when I get hit by both lanes of traffic and everybody's a little upset, and I'm certainly experiencing that. If you didn't see Blake Morlock's article of of Why Society is Completely Screwed. I would encourage you to read it. It's a pretty measured article, in my opinion, about this polarization where if one side doesn't get what they want, the other side shouldn't get what they want. So we're expensive, and I'm unapologetic about that. My staff deserve to have the equipment that they need to safely do a really complex job. And the reality is at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night, the one government resource that's still out there is who? The police officer.
Reassurance that you'll get what you want if it passes.
That fear was here for 101 too. I'm extremely confident in mayor and council and the structure that we set up, which did work as designed in Prop 101. We've demonstrated to the voters, if you fund it and we tell you what we're going to do with it, you can hold us accountable to that. It has an oversight. We'll have an oversight committee just like 101 did. And the big thing that people need to understand is we needed enough autonomy in this thing to build it to where things will change in the next decade. We can't always forecast what the next crisis will be. And we need some autonomy to be nimble within the column. So within those five buckets of first responder capital investments, neighborhood community resilience, technology investments for safety, enhanced emergency response, and affordable housing and shelter, we can move dollars around within the confines of those buckets. But if money were to be moved from one bucket or to another, that would have to go back to the voter. So that should give confidence in the voter that these are the spaces that we think we need the funds, and this is what we're asking.
So there's no way to take money that would be voted on for housing, say, and buy you more cop cars with it.
Correct. Or vice versa, decide that I don't need a plane to put it in housing.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't be competing. You know, I refuse far left, far right, always want it to be polarizing, competing. Arrest is an effective way to solve some problems. And incarceration then is also sometimes effective beyond the arrest. But breaking the cycle, the transition center, we know down at Pima County works. It is supported by some of the business groups and coalitions here in town. But let's be clear, that is a pilot. That is not a program. It has not been scaled to handle the need. We've got real dollars that are in this bucket that can help programs like that scale.
Dylan, did you want to go more on 414? Can I switch topics?
I think maybe talking about a lot of folks' concerns about immigration would be
definitely an
appropriate
that
thing.
That is definitely on.
We could dig more into the proposition,
sure,
because that's coming up soon. But, you know, a whole lot of people this week have been very fearful of what might be going on with, you know, the new administration coming in and President Trump's declaration about mass deportations. And there have been rumors flying about, you know, checkpoints in certain places and raids about to happen in certain places in Tucson and as well as around the country. And what is the city's current stance on how you deal with ICE, DHS, Border Patrol, all of that?
So let me just say the initially the federal government appears to be focused on sanctuary cities, which we are not. We are an immigrant welcoming community that started under Mayor Rothschild, has continued under Mayor Romero. I don't see that status changing. There's a lot of federal funding that's tied to that if you designate yourself as a sanctuary city. I depend on over $20 million, just my department alone, on grant, federal grant funds. And so it would be catastrophic for the city to change that status financially. This is having real impact in Tucson. It's been a busy year, and it's not even February yet, because obviously a lot of conversation about 414 and a ton of conversation with the change of leadership in Washington under Prop 314, how that's going to impact Tucson that mm-hmm. we just voted on. The Riley Act is another thing that we should be paying attention to, that I think it's not been signed by the president yet, but more than likely will. And there's a lot of folks in our community who don't have citizenship who are thinking about leaving Tucson, and some that have. I've heard stories where folks have bought houses, they're leaving, kids are not being taken to school. So it's really unfortunate. What I would tell you is, you know, as a listener, educate yourself on what's impacting Tucson. Our refugee population, asylum seeker population, and the immigrant population are not the folks who are creating harm at scale in our community. So that narrative just doesn't exist here. But we do have to recognize we live an hour and 20 minutes north of the border, which is unsecure, and that's problematic for me from a public safety lens of when you can traffic human beings and narcotics across the border unchallenged, that's a problem, and we need to address that. But we also need a process for meaningful immigration reform So folks who want to come work in agriculture or other fields can come to our country and then go back. And you know, you don't have to go to Green Valley to see the financial impact of what that means when folks can't come to and from.
Question from a Facebook listener. How does the new Riley Act affect TPD?
So there's going to be two things. If it is enacted by the president, it basically means a mandatory detention for any misdemeanor crime where somebody's booked. And they're not with
booked into the jail,
booked in the Pima County jail. That's the way it would work here, and that they would basically have an immigration hold, and then the sheriff would then be sanctioned, as I understand it. Now, I haven't had legal interpretation of this, but as I am watching it unfold here, that the attorney general's office would then hold the sheriff accountable if he were to release those folks. So what that would mean for us is I'd have to evaluate our current policies on whether or not that was, you know, something I wanted to give direction on to the staff that were on the field. So they understood if you're going to book somebody who doesn't have citizenship on this misdemeanor arrest, what that means actually is that you're taking actions that would more than likely cause her.
Exactly. How serious is that misdemeanor?
Yeah, correct. And so right now, what hasn't changed in our state is a guiding policy of SB 1070, which has been in place for over a decade. So people should not have fear. What I would tell folks in our community, and really this is for everybody, is, you know, have your vehicle registered, insured, all of your equipment in functioning order. You know, if you have domestic violence issues in your family, there's resources for you to, you know, folks are that's one of the spaces we don't have autonomy to not take someone to jail is under domestic violence. So there's things people in our community can do that don't have citizenship to keep themselves from having contact with officials.
Can you give us some kind of sense of how Tucson is, you know, comparative? How is our crime rate doing with other kind of peer cities around the country?
Are we both
on the, you know, serious violent crimes, but just those basic quality of life
and
issues?
Peer cities would be places like Albuquerque, I would assume.
I get a quarterly snapshot on what's going on in the rest of the country in comparing our cities. We certainly did not see the lowering of violent crime across the board like some other communities did. But as I stated, there's other system components that have to do their job for us to yield those returns. And I don't think they did last year. So I'm hoping for changes there this year. I think our gun crime is higher than it should be. I think our traffic fatalities are much higher than they should be. And that takes all of us, you know, taking a shift. I 1,200 employees can't change the behavior of 500,000 people. So we have to start looking at the family circle. We have to start looking at, you know, who owns guns. We have to look at, you know, driving behavior, something that we can all commit to early this year. I can tell you right now, you don't want to be at, even if you're not at fault in a traffic fatality death where there's an unsheltered person jaywalking, and that's where the majority of those happen. And we saw an increase of those over last year. That's a devastating thing to have taken the life of somebody else, even if you're not at fault. So that really means keep your phones down, pay attention when you think you have the right of way. A third of our fatalities are left turns, which means just pay attention and slow down. Everybody's in such a rush to what? 2 or 3 minutes, 5 minutes isn't going to change the driving cycle or the driving behavior of you getting there. Violent crime, your odds of being a victim of a violent crime if you don't have risky behaviors are extremely low in this town, especially if, you know, you're home and in bed by 10 o'clock at night like most of us are.
I'm not in bed by 10 o'clock.
So
I am.
You and a few other friends. I am. Unless I'm working.
To bed.
So ultimately, I think as the 33rd largest city in the country, we're average. I think for a border city with the level of poverty that we have, and again, you know, 50% of fentanyl in this country being seized in our state, those that creates issues for us that are unique to Tucson. So it's hard to be a complete comparator. Albuquerque is one of the communities that I'm in regular contact with their chief Medina, who's also my sister public safety partnership. So again, we are comparing and contrasting and looking at programs. And there's other parts of the country that have made much larger financial investments in their public safety team and judicial resources to get different results. So again, that whether it's 414 or other conversations we're having moving forward, large changes will have to come through investment, systems investment.
Question from a listener, violent crime in particular areas, what should we know about that?
I of course get those breakdowns.
Is there one area that might be someplace you're really focusing on?
That is what is unique to Tucson is we don't have just one part of town that, you know, that that has it.
The so-called other side of the tracks.
Yeah, and I will tell you, that, you know, the intersection out, there's multiple wards sometimes that are served by different divisions. So we had 24 homicides in Operations Division South. We had 16 in Operations Division West. So south side is things mainly south of Golf Links. which shares a little bit of that with Team 1 and Team 4. Operations Division West had 16 homicides. Operations Division Midtown had 11. And Operations Division East, which is everything east of Craycroft, and shares some of that jurisdiction with the south side, had 13. So, again, and what I would tell you is if you're not selling drugs, you don't have, you know, spontaneous fistfights and violence with folks at, you know, in the middle of intersections and convenience stores, your chances and probability being a victim of a violent crime are extremely low here.
Any comment on shoplifting?
Another space that we really have to get our arms wrapped around. Our unsheltered population drives the majority of the shoplifting issues we have. We are meeting with some big box stores to figure out how do we use technology to detour and solve those crimes when we have them. And of course, you know, how do you, it goes back to the transition center. How do you leverage different decisions? You know, why are people shoplifting? Why are they, you know, their substance misuse or mental health disorders? How do you get people on their feet and stabilized? Certainly, obviously, the focus of the Housing First initiatives for the city.
All right, Chief, we're going to wrap it up with you, but for your closing remarks for our quarterly visit, what would you like our listeners to know? Perhaps something we've not covered.
Here we go, 2025, my year four as chief. We continue to grow, slight growth in the department and our professional staff. I joined TucsonPD.org. We have about hopefully 30 TPD recruits starting our academy the first week in February. We're looking for your loved ones. I'm committed to hiring from within Tucson. I think that's the best way we serve our population. And we're looking for great folks to employ. So join TucsonPD.org, and I look forward to serving you all as chief this year.
And the process from beginning application to actually going out on the street, I've wondered about that myself.
It's about a year. Yeah. It's about a year-long process, application process to starting the academy, probably about a four-month process.
All right, Chief, we wish you well.
Thanks good for luck. Having
me on. We'll have you, have you on in the spring to talk about how we're doing.
Sounds good.
In 2025. All right, Dylan, stick around. We'll talk a little bit about that news that you guys, I think, broke this about Pima County saying that the housing asylum seekers, that's pretty much they're out of the business, right?
Well, there aren't that many people down there at the migrant shelter that the county's been, supporting with mostly federal funds for years now.
Okay.
And so not much sense in keeping it open at this point.
We'll pick up on that and a few other items with Dylan Buckmaster on a Friday. Again, our thanks to the chief of police. Thanks, Chief, for coming in. Appreciate it very much. All right. Back after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to the Chief of Police, Chad Kazmaier. He comes on our program, gives his quarterly report to our listeners, and this was the winter report. Dylan Smith is here. Speaking of winter, we're into Dylan from TucsonSentinel.com. I think when all is said and done, Dee, after the numbers come out from the Weather Service, I know so far it's been the coldest January in 25 years, and repeatedly the Weather Service has said maybe 32 degrees, like the other night, 26 in Midtown, it's 24 been, up in the foothills. I mean, it was a
really crazy change because our
December
holidays,
was one of the warmest months on record.
We didn't get to have a nice, cheery fire in our fireplace for Christmas
we went
or anything because it was just too hot to do.
Warmest to coldest.
And then, so, a slap in the face.
Anyway, getting back to what you were saying right before the break, after more than 5 years of housing asylum seekers, Pima County is going to go in a different direction.
Well, this is, kind of driven by a confluence of events that are going on. The number of folks who have been, picked up along the border has been down dramatically for months and months and months, well before the election, really extending back to last summer. And so, the feds have been picking up fewer people. It's mostly been asylum seekers, people who want to be taken into custody by Border Patrol so they can get signed up and get into the asylum system. But then, for years they have been released. And they didn't really have any place to go or any resources. It started with the feds releasing folks just onto the street kind of randomly at the Greyhound station or something. So Pima County worked with nonprofit partners to set up these shelters where people could have a place to stay for a few days here in Tucson and contact people and figure out how they were going to get to, their ultimate destination. With only a handful of people around at this point, the logistics of that has become, kind of a big deal. The money for it is going away. The only way these places stay open is because of the federal money that is paid for them. The county doesn't have enough room in the general fund to keep the shelter ready and open if someone does come.
Mm-hmm.
The feds pay for people who are actually there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no more money. And not even because of any action by the Trump administration at this point, but just because if there's nobody there, there will be no money.
Right.
So a whole bunch of folks, just found out that they're losing their jobs, the people that work at these shelters, and the people who volunteer aren't going to be there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has kind of played a little bit of a role in some of the panic that's been spreading amongst a lot of the activists and volunteers who work with migrants and maybe some of the migrants themselves, but that, the shelters being closed and there are still a handful of people. What happens to them? There's some concern that they will be picked up again, even though they've already gotten themselves into the system.
Will some charitable organization help
those individuals?
It's possible
churches. The level that it's at now, that churches may be able to facilitate rather than needing a full bore county run shelter for things.
Getting back to Prop 414, and we're hitting it real hard on our program.
Well, I mean, people have to start making a decision.
They do.
In the next, and that's, you know,
that's why we've
next
been hit,
month.
That's why we've been really hitting it hard. And I tried to bring up the opposition, and there are a couple of points, and I think we covered them with the chief, that the people that are opposed to this are saying, what assurance do we have that what they say is...
I think you hear that kind of concern from both the right and the left.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are progressives who say that this isn't enough about social services that will prevent crime from taking place in the first place. They want more money for housing. They want more money for, you know, services that will help people who are homeless.
Sure.
You know, people on the right think that that stuff is, you know, shouldn't be in there at all. And if mm-hmm. we're going to do it, it should be just, you know, cops all the way.
Right.
And
right.
so you've got kind of, you know, a little bit of a horseshoe theory kind of thing happening mm-hmm. where, you know, people on the far right and the far left are both opposed to this.
All right. TucsonSentinel.com. Are you in pretty good shape for your organization as you begin the calendar year?
Oh, yes. You know, we're very grateful for the community support that sustains us at the Sentinel.
A lot of people donated before the end of the year. There was a couple of Ganga matching gifts, right?
Yeah. You know,
triple your money or something?
We rely on people in this community to continue to dig into the desert dirt. We're a nonprofit and funded in the main by individual, you know, people who give us, you know, fairly modest contributions. And part of our year-end fundraising campaign, there were a match both from a national campaign and you know, a group of very generous local folks who offered to, you know, step up and match small dollar local donations. And you know, that's not going to carry us through the rest of the year. We always need you know, more people to become members of our Watchdog Club and contribute, so we can, you know, keep hiring more amazing reporters like journalists like Blake Morlock, who the chief talked about his piece the other day, which kind of irked a whole lot of people by his take that you know, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, was kind of his point with it.
Mm-hmm. Where could folks that all of the material that is archived, right, at TucsonSentinel.com?
Yeah, you know, we're I think we're kicking off our 15th year now.
Right.
We have, you know, more than the more than 40,000 stories we've published.
Really? There's 40,000 in the archives
on TucsonSentinel.com.
Wow.
And if you want to you know, support us, go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog, and you may become a member of the Watchdog Club and help us do even more real local journalism
about
Tucson.
Yeah, you guys are starting, I think we started just a little bit behind you with our program, and pretty much 98% of every show I've done since January, the first week of January 2011, we've got archived.
That's a lot of radio, man.
At buckmastershow.com. So there's a
lifetime of listening.
Yeah, a ton of content of historic proportions. Let's leave it like that. Hey, Dylan, I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. You too.
All right. Coming up next, Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, our sister station. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion regional transportation plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
It is time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only a 3-hour drive, not a bad drive at all. East of Tucson, Silver City and Grant County makes a great weekend getaway. Start your planning now for an enchanting getaway in the land of enchantment by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Ken Carr is here, the very popular midday host on 101.7 The Drive, with some ideas to make this weekend enchanting for us here in Tucson. Hey, Ken.
Well, once we get past Christmas, it seems like we start loading up on all the events.
Oh, it's prime time, Ken, in Tucson. It's January.
So, Jazz Festival, we had the Jazz Fiesta on Martin Luther King Day, but it's still going on through this weekend. Actually, it's today and tomorrow, the last 2 days.
Pretty good entertainment, too.
The biggest headliner is Sheila E., who used to play with Prince, who played drums, and her show is tomorrow at the Fox Theater, but the list has been long, and it gets better every year, the crew that runs the Jazz Festival, so make sure you check that out, TucsonJazzFestival.org, if you want to check out the website. The Gem Show's still going on.
Oh, yeah, it's off and running.
So it kind of started around the 18th, but it really kicks into gear once we get into this weekend and into February. There's all kinds of locations around Tucson and people that come from out of town for this. There's some wholesale shows.
They come from all over the world.
Yeah, they do. And they should, because mm-hmm. Tucson's a wonderful place. Mm-hmm. Gosh darn it. And they also have put together, I found this website that's really great. It's called TucsonGemShow101.com. And literally it lists every show that's going on around Tucson. Tucson, the locations, the hours, whether it's open to the public or just to wholesalers. So that's a great help if you want to go see what's going on.
And again, that venue was, or that website?
TucsonGemShow101.com.
Good tip there, Ken. What else is going on?
So here's something that's kind of fun. Fly a Drone Day.
Whoa.
You don't have to go to New Jersey to do that, right? You can do it right here. Pima Air and Space Museum, that's tomorrow from 10 to 3. And you can learn the basics of drone flight. You can even fly your own drone indoors at the Pima Air and Space Museum, 10 to noon for beginners and 1 to 3 for intermediate in the afternoon. They do recommend it for ages 11 and up. I think you and I qualify for that.
Is it a UFO or a drone?
But drones have gotten so popular these days.
They really are.
It's kind of exciting. And also the Drive and a lot of other people are going to be at the Savor event. That's the Southern Arizona Culinary Festival, which is tomorrow from 11 to 3. Over 70 of Southern Arizona's finest chefs, wineries, breweries.
That's a cool event.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I can hear people's stomachs grumbling right now. Go get a snack.
Oh, man. And just sample a little bit of that, a little bit of this.
And also, a couple circuses are still wrapping up this weekend. The Zoppé Family Circus, that's the old world Italian circus, and Paranormal Cirque. And if you've seen the tents at Tucson Mall, they've set them up, and it's paranormal, so it's kind of dark and, and you know.
It's the Twilight Zone acrobatics.
A little bit. It's kind of what people are scared about clowns for sometimes. Oh, yeah. There's a crowd that actually wants to go see that.
They want to see the clown. All right, Ken, we're going to have to leave it right there. Thanks so much. Ken Carr, 101.7 The Drive. We'll listen to your work. I'll be listening on the way home. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
The Buckmaster. Buckmaster Show, presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the program. Thanks to Kent Carr. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. Wishing everybody well. Have a great weekend.